Thank you, and welcome to the session. I want to tell you about, from a state perspective, how we've been trying to build interest and support and understanding of prevention that is allowing us to capitalize on what's happening at the federal level. And certainly my brief time in the public arena has taught me that things come and go, but what we need to do is to build understanding, infrastructure, and appreciation for the value of prevention such that it lasts and can be opportunistic for whatever the situation that we find ourselves in. We're in a good situation at this point around prevention, particularly in thinking about it from a national level. But I see Mark Horton, another state health official in the audience, and there may be others. We were just at a meeting with Tom Frieden, who came to our annual state health officials meeting. And Tom said, you know, we need stories about prevention. You know, we can sit and say, well, we're increasing access to places for kids to be physically active and to be, you know, we're changing our neighborhoods and changing the environment and policies and systems. And he says, you know, that works fine for us in this room, and it works fine for policy wonks, but policymakers need a story about how Johnny and his mom never had a playground to go to, and now Johnny and his mom, and you have the picture of the playground, go to this playground playground twice a week, and now Johnny has, you know, feels so much better, and he used to be getting, you know, some F's in school, and he's not anymore because he's, you know, more alert, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got to start thinking about with our prevention and to hang on to this and to be able to embed it, we've got to figure out better ways to tell the stories about prevention that will resonate. And so some of my presentation today is to really tell you about how we are embedding stories, and I've used that in our whole prevention work, and I think it's something we need to do nationally so we can tell this, tell the evidence around prevention in a language that resonates with policymakers and with average people. I mean, one of the things that we did for our whole health reform in Minnesota, which was a lot of legislative talk and policy, is that we've made a logo of it, and we gave it a name, you know, A Better State of Health. Again, just trying to make it something that when I go out and talk about health reform, it resonates. Oh, they want a better state of health. Yeah, lots of ways you can interpret that. No, that doesn't work. Okay, now, great, thanks. So we have a goal in Minnesota for what we're doing with health reform that encompasses our prevention. And it's the triple aim, and it's what Berwick wrote about in Health Affairs a number of years ago. It's about improving population health, improving the experience of care, and improving affordability. Berwick in his article says decreasing per capita cost. We changed it and put it all of them in the positive, improve part. One kind of aside that I would say we in public health need to watch, I have seen the triple aim simplified, and normally you think simplification is good, but in this case, it's being called better health, better care, lower cost. I'm nervous about that simplification because better health, when you're talking in a health care organization, they think care. They think better health care. And better care, for the second bullet, I think loses that experience of care. And if you talk to people, they assume they're getting good care, although we know they might not be. It's the experience of care that people are finding even more horrible in our institutions. So, but anyway, we have said what we're trying to accomplish in Minnesota is to improve population health. And therefore, prevention becomes a critical component of what we're trying to do in health reform. So the groundwork that we had for health reform, in which we built prevention in, was a number of groups meeting, including the Minnesota Medical Association. So those of you in states, I would urge you to reach out and embrace and work with your hospital association, your medical association, others to understand the whole issue of getting upstream. Because what came out was led to our legislation was that a real understanding of the need to invest upstream. So a comprehensive package of things that people said we need to have prevention included. So just like at the federal level, but in this particular case in Minnesota that happened in 2008, was our legislation started with an investment in public health. So it was like it was seen that that was absolutely key to work to get better health, was that we needed to get upstream. And that's one of the messages I think that we need to continue to tell people. And when we were going through the whole legislative part, you know, everybody kind of focuses on health care because that's where all the money is. And I would say, okay, we're going to make care better for people with diabetes. But with the obesity curve we have going, all we're going to do is pour more people with diabetes into the system. We will not have solved the problem. Almost everybody in the U.S., because of the prevalence of diabetes, they either have diabetes, somebody in their family has diabetes, or they know someone with diabetes. It's a chronic disease that again, the public and policymakers can relate to. And so you talk about more people coming in, they got it. And so we were able to persevere with moving upstream and having SHIP, our statewide health improvement program, be part of our legislation, and it starts with that. Couple of lessons again about prevention and what you're trying to do to embed that into our society and our culture. Initially, this was called the Statewide Health Promotion Program. Now, all of us know what health promotion is. I mean, it's a very common term. We know exactly what that means. To policymakers, promotion sounded like marketing. It sounded like trinkets and keychains and brochures. To us, we were thinking policy systems and environmental changes, but it became very apparent no way were they going to support a program that was about, in their minds, trinkets and marketing. So we quickly changed it to the Statewide Health Improvement Program, and we got a better acronym anyway. We got SHIP out of it with all the things of talking about sailing into different lands and launching things and so forth. So that worked really well. The other thing about language is initially SHIP was supposed to encompass, it was based on Steps to a Healthier U.S., so it was the CDC program. It was supposed to encompass a lot of things, a lot of healthy behaviors. And so we talked about working on the leading preventable causes of illness and death, tobacco, physical inactivity, unhealthy eating, alcohol, sexual behaviors. I mean, we talked about a number of things. But we found that particularly when you say physical inactivity and unhealthy eating or unhealthy nutrition, people's eyes just kind of glaze over. And so we changed it to tobacco and obesity back in 2007 before the legislation, because everyone knew or could see obesity. Or they could see the kids on their playgrounds or in their schools, becoming more obese. And so again, the language matters when you're talking to people and to policymakers about issues. So that's how SHIP, we use the data about what was happening with tobacco and obesity in Minnesota and the cost related to it, that there was $2 billion in preventable healthcare costs related to tobacco. Again, right now we have a huge issue with rising healthcare costs, so we have to speak the language of money because we have to show that we might not be the answer to the problem, but we are part of a solution of rising healthcare costs. So SHIP was launched with $47 million for 2 years. It's the minimum per capita amount that CDC recommends for a statewide prevention health improvement program. Again, lessons learned about interacting with policymakers when we were beginning to launch this and getting the legislation done. We, of course, in public health like to be ecumenical and, you know, everybody gets it and everybody gets to work on it. And every time we took competitive grants out of the legislation, legislative language, they put competitive back in and we went back and forth. And we finally just said, look, this is a theme that the legislature wants, competition for these grants, even though we want it to be a statewide program. We have to figure out a way to make technical assistance work so that anybody who wants it, we will help them get it. And so that's what we ended up doing. The other part was they wanted a match. Legislature didn't want to just give this money. They wanted communities to step forward. It started off as a 50% match in the legislation. And so we just kind of kept whittling away, and we finally got down to, we left in competition, and we got it down to a 10% match, and it could be in-kind services. So with that, we launched our RFP, and we have we put incentives in the RFP for people to work together. So they got additional money if counties adjacent to each other went together and worked on something together. We put incentives in for tribes to work together, because the tribal nations historically had not come together and worked among themselves or worked with counties in which the tribes were located. So we actually put in incentives, and a lot of people took us up on those incentives to get economies of scale to work on health improvement around tobacco and obesity. So we have 41 grants that are covering all 87 counties within Minnesota and 9 out of the 11 tribal nations that take state money. So again, it focuses on the policy systems, environmental changes. Another thing I would say, this whole thing with prevention and trying to embed it, and let's make certain that everybody sees it, it's the part about embracing personal responsibility and community responsibility, not having this polarization like it's one or the other. And I always use the story of, you know, I walk most nights of the week, so I'm being physically active. It's my personal responsibility, put on my tennis shoes, put on my coat, and go out the door. But if I didn't have a community where my neighbor, because the research says that non-family support people are more likely to be physically active, if my neighbor wasn't willing to go walking, I live in inner city Minneapolis, if I didn't have sidewalks and lighted streets and, you know, policemen patrolling, I wouldn't go walking. So it takes both personal responsibility and community responsibility. And I think that prevention message, we might get one side more than another. We need to say both so people can find themselves in it and can be supportive of it. I told you about how SHIP started based on something, and it was based on the steps to a healthier U.S. And you know what that gave us? Were stories to tell and pictures of things that were happening. And one classic one was my director of SHIP, or it wasn't SHIP then, but was trying to get it, was testifying in front of the legislature, in front of the policy group that could authorize the money, the committee. And she showed a picture or told about how in Rochester, Minnesota, they had a community garden going now, and that how people were planting, you know, fruits and vegetables, and how they were working together and the kids were coming. And, you know, she described this community garden and what a difference it had made in the community and having access to that. And the chair of this policy committee and the funding committee looked at her and said, you know, when my kids were growing up, we had a vegetable garden, and to this day, I believe that's why they eat their vegetables. And boom. She was the one who authorized the $47 million. So, you know, you've got to figure out a way to tell the story that people see themselves in it versus it's some ethereal access to fruits and vegetables and, you know, policy language that kind of goes over people's heads. So the RFP that we did put out did have menu evidence-based interventions. Again, I think that is something that policymakers are understanding and appreciate, that if you say it's evidence-based, CDC carried a lot of weight in our state if we said this is CDC approved or we've worked with CDC. So figure out who your partners are that you can work with that have, you know, panache in your state, that have credibility, that are wear the white hats in your state and or in your locale and can make a difference. They had to work in at least one in each of four settings. So again, it was very community-based in this effort. And they had to have a leadership team that showed the diverse stakeholders. So again, getting a lot of buy-in at the local level. Now, one of the things that happened, so the $47 million was authorized, and then the next, like, 6 months, we had this huge budget deficit come down the pike. And then the next 6 months, the grants were to go out. Everybody started getting really nervous and saying, oh, we're not going to get the money. Why should we bother doing an RFP? You know, oh, I shouldn't think about hiring anybody. And they just came so pessimistic. And one of the things I've seen here at this summit is people saying, we've got to be optimistic. We've got to be positive. We've got to inhabit the destiny, the future that we want. So I started saying to people, look, our best defense is a strong offense. I said, I want to see on my desk, I said, applications from every community health board and every tribal nation. And I went to the group and I said, I want them on my desk. And they did it. They put them on my desk. And so then we were able to go over to the legislature and say, overwhelming response to this RFP. You cannot take the money. We didn't say that, but you know, overwhelming response. People want this. Everybody in your area, we had people, you know, calling and telling people, you know, we want to do this. We generated enthusiasm. So same thing with the prevention money at the national level. We've already had one run at it with the Johans Amendment. We've got to be diligent in being our best defense is a strong offense. And we've got to keep telling the stories and getting people involved about this, because I think that will be extremely protective for us. Showing examples. These are just some examples of implementation of SHIP so forward. You know, the tobacco industry, they can't overtly go after kids, but they're still covertly going after kids. But overtly, they can go after college age and young adults. And they're doing it in Minnesota and everywhere you are. So we're working on post-secondary campuses being tobacco free. So the first time that a campus in one of the key legislators' area went smoke-free, we took a picture of the smoke-free campus that had the SHIP logo beside it, took a picture of it, I signed it, and said, aren't you proud, representative, of what's happening in your community, and sent it to them. I mean, you've just got to constantly be thinking, how can we keep this in front of people? I've told everybody I want a media story in your local paper about what SHIP is doing. I want you to have pictures. When you do your first, you know, safe route to school, I said, I want you to invite a policymaker, and I want a ribbon cutting with that policymaker there. We've got to make this real to people and have them feel very connected to this prevention work that's going on if we want to continue to sustain it. So certainly when the federal funding came for SHIP, we had people energized, thinking about it, and ready to make applications to leverage what's happening at the federal level. And it's going to be complementary to what we're doing in the statewide area. So we've had great success in doing grants for federal funding. So what are some lessons learned that I would say in about prevention work is getting bipartisan support. You know, prevention is, what did you call it? You've got a new word for us, transpartisan. Yeah, transpartisan. You know, it can appeal to everyone. And getting those and fostering those and sustaining those champions is important. Concrete examples of what this looks like. And so being able to say, like, we have something now called Great Trays, in which we are working with the purchasers of food there's like a coalition of groups that purchase food for schools, and we're working with them to get better food from local farmers. So being able to call this the Great Trays Initiative. You know, all of us remember going to school, the lunchroom trays. So when you describe to a person, we're going to have better trays for your kids, it's putting it in a different context. And then being able to say, and here's Farmer Joe, who's bringing his produce to the school, your school, to make a great tray for your kid. So making it very concrete, public-private partnerships, so this is not just government doing it, it's not us telling people, this is about a partnership, and then of course using data to help drive this decision-making. And then what's next for us? You know, when my staff made this slide, the first bullet said, looking for a sustainable funding source. And I said, no, we're not looking for it. We are creating a sustainable funding source. I said, we have got to be positive, forward thinking about what we're going to try to do. And in fact, and you can use your policymakers to help you in this way. One of the legislative, the person who was chair of the policy committee put in the legislation that the Commissioner of Health had to propose funding recommendations for SHIP going forward. And so I was able to put in funding recommendations, although my governor didn't approve of them, and so, but we negotiated, and I was able to say the funding recommendations, but say my governor doesn't approve of them, but we have, he's not running anymore, we'll have a new governor in the next session. We need to explore using the infrastructure. I think one of the things we need to think about is we use prevention money. It's not just a program for today and tomorrow, today or for however long, that we're creating infrastructure. So I'm thinking SHIP with all of these community health boards and all of these leadership teams and all of this work we're doing on policy systems and environmental changes, we could do that on alcohol. You know, we could use that same mechanism to address other things and to be able to pitch it in that way. So that's the view from a state level. Now you're going to hear from county and community level, and we'll look forward to your questions.
And this is the point where we are going to hold our breath.